We all have 24 hours. There's some people that are far more productive with those 24 hours than other people, but there's a happy balance between doing the things you need to do every single day to be successful and not.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Baubert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. I am here with Eric Bond. Eric, what's up, man? How are you today?
Hey, brother. How you doing? I am great.
I'm excited to talk with you. I'm doing great. Ultimately, I want to learn a lot from you because you've got your own podcast competitors mentality. You've got your own business competitors mentality. And I am a dropout athlete who ultimately is just getting started in a business world, doing better at business than I did athletics. But to my understanding, you've got a lot of great feedback for athletics, business, life in itself. So I want to give you an opportunity. Introduce what is competitors mentality and what do you do at competitors mentality?
Sure. So primarily, well, first things first, thanks so much for having me on the program. I really appreciate it. Thanks for reaching out and bringing me on. So competitors mentality is all about owning your moment and owning, doing the things to own the big moments in your life. So the people that I work with are entrepreneurs and athletes. So on the entrepreneurial side, I am helping entrepreneurs work on the mental side of their game. Success is 90% mental, but what happens in the corporate world and in small businesses in America and really all over the world, they spend so much time focused on tactics and strategies and mechanics of certain things, and they don't spend enough time tapping into the mental side of the game. So they spend 90% of the time working on the things I just mentioned, and maybe spend 10% or less working on the mental side to make people successful. So where I come in is I work with entrepreneurs on that mental side of the game to make them more holistic in what they are doing on a daily basis to enhance their business, to enhance their wellness, to enhance their family life, and really make that person whole. And then on the athlete side, I do work with former college athletes and professional athletes and also post-career in life after sports. So life after sports is a journey that I went on as a former college athlete. I know a ton of people that play professional sports, a ton of people that play collegiately. And a lot of times the journey is very similar. You go through that transition, you're trying to discover yourself. You're a little bit lost. You don't know who you are. And you don't know what you want to do. You know that you have certain skills and a skill set that is very transferable into a lot of different things, but you just don't, you're just kind of lost and you're going through an identity crisis a lot of the time. So where I come in is to help people really figure out the three P's. What are you passionate about? What is going to be profitable for you? And what are you proficient in? And coming up with those three areas and guiding somebody into a career, whether they want to be an entrepreneur or an accountant or whatever it is, that's kind of where I come in with the athletes.
I love that. Passionate, profitable, proficient. Correct. And mindset obviously is infused in all of that. Let's talk a little bit more about mindset, maybe on a day-to-day level. Sure. And the reason I say day-to-day is, to my understanding, doesn't really matter what happened in the past, and my goals for the future doesn't matter if my mindset right now sucks. If I'm thinking about my next call, my previous call, I'm not going to be present with you, right? So how do I have a good daily mindset, and why should I be focusing on mindset? Maybe I'm already a top performer and I'm already kicking ass. Do I really need mindset? Like, let's give like a day-to-day, like a full beginner's one-on-one for anyone who hasn't dived into this yet.
Sure. Yeah, that's a loaded question. But here's the deal. And I'll give you a very quick example. So in my prior, before I launched my own business, I was in corporate America for over 10 years in leadership. And the last seven of those, I was with MassMutual New York State. So I had a team that I ran there, was in Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, most of upstate New York, Western New York. And what would happen is that we would bring a lot of advisors in, and that was kind of my job. I was a regional director of recruiting, and we would bring advisors in. And what would happen is early on, they would have maybe 3-4 meetings a week. So what happens in a situation like that is you can train and go to trainings, get into modules, work on all of these tactical things. But once you get into a meeting, all of that goes out the window because you're so focused on, number one, attracting a client, number two, making money to survive, that all that stuff gets forgotten about rather quickly. So that's why getting into a situation and really working on your mental game is so important. And one of the things that I talk to people on is, you know, the big buzzword nowadays is process. Everybody's, you know, processed to death. But that's what you have to do in order to be great. You have to fall in love with the process of being great. And the process means a lot of things. It means obviously doing the work to be great at your job. It's just like, you know, Steph Curry. Steph Curry's in the gym every single day getting up hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shots so he can perform. And it just is second nature to him in the game. So you have to fall in love with the process of being great and set free the end result. Because ultimately, you do not control the end result in the majority of situations in your life. What you do control is your habits, what you do every single day, what you say, what your attitude is, how you treat people, how you respond to events. And once people get into a meeting with somebody, going back to that younger advisor example, a lot of times they can't process situations very well within that actual meeting. There's no contingency plan set in place. So if somebody takes the conversation at a different rate, they don't know how to check and adjust. All of that goes back to preparation. But once again, if your mind's not right, preparation is out the window. And I'm very fortunate and blessed. So one of my mentors is a Navy SEAL, a former Navy SEAL. He was in the SEAL teams. He was in the SEAL teams for, you know, 16 years. And this guy,
one of the hardest ways to serve our country. That is correct. Not easy to become a SEAL. Go on.
Correct. And with him, he was actually, so, you know, if we go back to 9/11, he was on the ground in Saudi Arabia when the towers went down, working with Saudi special forces in a training app. So he's watching the towers go down. Wow. In real time over in the Middle East with Saudis. And literally, so I forget what the timeline was, but if you look at whenever they launched, you know, they said you're going to launch an operation against Afghanistan. Well, he was already on the ground in Afghanistan days after the towers went down. So he's already out into the battlefield doing recon missions Nobody knows. You know, nobody knew in this country. We already had troops on the ground and elite special forces. And he was literally there like days after the towers were down, already laying the foundation, the groundwork to find people. So I'm very, very blessed and fortunate that he's a mentor of mine. I work closely with him. And a lot of things that I do with people are inspired really through special forces training. Not that I went through that, but I've been trained in some ways through Rob on how to process certain things. And everything goes back to the preparation and understanding who you are and preparing to be great, because that moment where you're acting is a small percentage of the overall process of inner work, pre-work, moment, debrief, and do everything all over again. So I guess that's kind of a little bit of a look in. I mean, I could probably talk about this, you know, we could make a whole show on that.
Yeah.
But the big thing, that the takeaway there is fall in love with the process of being great and being successful and set free the end result. Because if you fall in love with the process, you are going to have success because you've trained and drilled on it, all going back to the mental side of things.
I love that. If you're focused on the process, you're going to have success. I'm happy you're explaining this, because I was explaining, you know, my mentality to someone the other day, and I couldn't say it quite as eloquently. I'm like, listen, I meditate, I work out, I'm doing gratitude, and it just works. It just works. And yeah. I believe it does just work, but it's hard to pinpoint why it's working.
Yeah, Ben, you're right. And I just want to interject something. And
please.
You have to play your game. And you brought up an interesting point. You have to play what works for you. You cannot play the guru's game. There's so many gurus out there that will tell you this is exactly how you do things. And by and large, that doesn't work. And it's good to solicit advice and to have two, three people that you kind of maybe look to, or if you have mentors, have one, two mentors or coaches that you work with. But ultimately, you have to take their advice, filter it to how it makes sense to you, and ultimately play your game. There are principles. There's really four principles that I try to teach people. Number one is you have your business, your day-to-day business stuff. Pick one or two things that are high focus there. So for me, it's lead gen and lead follow-up. Number two, you have wellness. For me, it's workout and water consumption. So come hell or high water, I consume 100 ounces of water every single day. Number three, it's doing something to learn and feed your mind. So for me is I spend time reading every day. Some days it's only 15 minutes. Some days it might be 45 minutes or an hour. The other thing is doing a journal entry and journaling. I don't do that first thing in the morning because I find that to be a waste of time to do right when you wake up. So I normally fit that in a later morning and then at the end of the day as I'm setting up my next day. And then the other piece is all about connecting and connecting with somebody that you haven't connected with maybe in a little bit, and also finding calm throughout the day. And somebody that might be meditation. For somebody, it might be a 15-minute gratitude walk. For somebody else, it might be breath work. But taking those four blocks and making those your daily non-negotiables works for me. I try to teach that to people, but they have to adopt what makes sense to them. There's no, you know, cookie cutter approach that's going to work for everybody across the board, but you have to play your game as the biggest thing that I could tell somebody.
I love it. Non-negotiables. I have my own. I know my answer to this question, but a lot of listeners might be curious. With all you just said there, that seems like it takes a lot of time out of Eric's day, and maybe I want to adapt it and do it my way, but do I really have the time, and am I really going to see results from writing or taking a gratitude walk or any of this stuff? Now, granted, obviously, you just said find what's right for you, but sure. Do you find it's worth your time? What benefit do you get out of all this?
100%. I mean, it is worth your time, and it's worth connecting to you, connecting to who you are as an individual, doing every single day, finding time to do that deep inner work and taking that self-care time for you. And there's a really interesting thing that's out there. It's called A Million Dollar Day. It's a book, which was written by Mark Holverson. And Mark passed away a few years ago from cancer, but he designed this process called The Million Dollar Day. And what that is literally you take five areas of your life and you pick, you know, like I'm in the process of setting up another Million Dollar Day, but you take three things for each one of those five areas and you do them all on the same day. What that does is it expands your capacity to what you can accomplish. And individuals have the same set of time as everybody else does. We all have 24 hours. There's some people that are far more productive with those 24 hours than other people, but there's a happy balance between doing the things you need to do every single day to be successful and not. So 100%, if it's important to you, you will make time to do it. And that's really why getting into morning routines, waking up at the same time every single day, shutting it down at the same time every single night, so you can get into circadian, those 5 90-minute blocks and circadian rhythm at night, which is a whole different conversation that I can get into with people and why what rest and recovery is so important and what you do. That way you're waking up refreshed, same time every day, and you go to bed the same time every day. So you can get it all fit in. And the main thing is you do something, not, you know, you like with reading. I go back to that reading example with reading. There's times where I can only fit in 15 minutes of reading every single day, but guess what? I do it. And there's times where I can fit in 45 or an hour. Gratitude journaling, that's something that maybe takes me between the two times that I do it during the day, it maybe takes me 15 minutes. Going for a gratitude walk. The big thing about that is, and the reason why I've adopted something like that is I work from home. I'm sitting at a desk all day. You have to get out and get your body going. So instead of maybe checking out for half an hour and going downstairs to your refrigerator for lunch and watching, you know, your favorite show or something like that for, you know, watching My 600-Pound Life for a half an hour, go take a walk around the block.
Right.
And connect to the things that you're grateful for. We all have things that we can be grateful for and get connected to those, because you're going to wind up in a much, much better place as a human being at the end of every single day and when you wake up in the morning ready to go.
No, you're spot on. And I'll tell you why I'm listening. I'm going to digress and then bring it back. You mentioned drinking a lot of water. I just talked about it the other day. My formula is just take your weight, split it in half. That's the minimum amount of ounces you should be drinking a day. Every Tuesday, I do my Gratitude Tuesday blog post. I've got an email newsletter because gratitude has been helpful for me. But to move into why I like listening to you, Eric, and I trust you, as you did mention that you worked in leadership in the corporate world for 10 years. And you even mentioned gurus giving you a prescription of this is the pill to take. This is exactly what you must do. And I find, and I'm not going to, you know, name drop anybody, throw them under the bus, but there's a lot of gurus teaching gurus how to be gurus. And then you end up with a 17-year-old who's a prophet on personal development, but has never worked a full-time job. And again, not knocking anybody, but you were in the corporate world for 10 years. I'm wondering, from that background, did you work for a good team? Did you work for a shitty team? What makes a good team? What makes a good business run? Like, what's your experience with that?
Great question. Now, My tenure at MassMutual, the 7 years that I spent there were the best 7 years that cumulatively the best 7 years that I've had in my working career. Wow. And ultimately it was time for me to move on. And I think, you know, I report directly to our CEO. He would agree with that. I would agree with that. Other people throughout the organization were in agreement with that. And I felt The reason I came to that point is I felt a calling to do more, be more, and speak to a wider audience of people and influence a wider audience of people because of the information that I have within me. But from a team standpoint, a great team. And the interesting thing about teams is, number one, you have to be all in for each other's success. There can't be any jealousy or there can't be any agenda. If somebody's successful, the rest of that team has to be happier than that individual that's having that success. And because there's going to be a time for everybody's light to shine, but you have to be cohesive as a unit and be genuinely happy when somebody within that team has success or gets a promotion or, you know, or does something on a grander scale. Number two with that is authenticity. If you are not authentic in your relationships with each other and you're not vulnerable with each other, bad things are going to happen. Mm. So when you're when you're running a team, the person that's running that team has to be the most authentic and vulnerable person of that group. And if they're not, the fences and the walls will be too high for you to ever get to the point of having a cohesive unit. You have to be vulnerable with what you're not good at. You have to be vulnerable with your failures and be authentic and connect with people. And I think a lot of people nowadays in corporate America are afraid to be vulnerable and they're afraid to be authentic because of, and I'm not going to, you know, I don't mean to be up here in my soapbox and talk about social media and everything else, but this culture that's been around for the last 10 years with the huge growth of social media and Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, where everybody's got this perfect idyllic life and everything's just so, and everybody says the right things and does the right things. That is a bunch of BS. And what happens is people replicate that. And they think that coming into the work world and the work environment, they try to be too perfect and they're not themselves. Authenticity sells. You will be a better leader if you're authentic and more vulnerable with your employees, and they will respond better to you and be vulnerable back to you. So when you're building out teams, those are two of the big pillars that, you know, just for time, I'm not going to go into more. I mean, I can go into more details, but those are two of the big things that as leaders nowadays, you have to keep in mind.
And just for a time, let's bring this up now. I do it at the end, but I want to bring it up right now. How do people find your podcast? How do they find your videos? How do they get training from you if they want to expand on this topic?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you can find me at competitorsmentality.com. My email is eric@competitorsmentality.com. You can find me on LinkedIn just by searching Eric Bond Competitors Mentality. You can find me on Instagram at Eric Philip Bond. Those are probably the best ways. I'm in the process of creating a Facebook group for Competitors Mentality. I won't be ready to launch that probably for about 2 or 3 weeks, but that's going to be something that I'm going to launch. So there's going to be a lot of, you know, kind of live stream stuff that I'm going to do every single week there and build out a community of people that are looking to do more and be more and own their moment.
Well, perfect, Eric. Just to let you know, June 23rd, it's my birthday by chance. That's when this is going to actually drop. So do you think that group's available now on June 23rd?
Yes, it will be up and, cool. and available then. Yep.
So that's going to be in the show notes. I want to move back. You were talking about how, you know, looking at people on social media and assuming that's their life. And if you want to be, I believe if you're a good leader, you said it well yourself, ultimately, the team around you are going to see that you're just a bullshitter taking pictures in front of cars. And sure. It reminded me of Jesse Kramer, who was on this show. He runs the Best Interest blog, you know, nationally known blog, great guy. And what he said is, you know, that's keeping up with the Joneses, right? But what a lot of people don't understand is the Joneses, they could be broke. And there's a lot. The other example that comes to mind for me is during like the social unrest of the Black Lives Matter movement, and you know, buildings were burning. There was one case, a story I hold of a social media model who basically showed up, took a few pictures with a hammer, got back in her car, and left.
Yes.
And it's, I don't bring it up other than to unveil the fact that it's not what it looks like on social media. And it sounds like you have a good understanding of how a leader should actually leave. They need to be transparent. They need to ultimately be someone that you can account on and be accountable for the team. I'm wondering, we've said a lot here, but I remember you told me a little bit about your mission statement and some of the values behind competitor mentality. I don't want to tell the story for you. Tell that story you told me when we spoke that last time.
Sure. Yeah. The everything for competitors mentality in my phrase goes back to the phrase "own your moment" goes back to my grandfather.
Own your moment.
So I'll tell a quick story here. So my grandfather was in D-Day. He actually wound up when he left the army. He was a colonel. I had the rank of colonel. Was just short of becoming a general when he left the army. Also went to work at Bell Aerospace and was a rocket scientist at Bell Aerospace. Helped design the rocket engine that actually lifted the astronauts off the moon for the first time. So that lunar landing module, my grandfather and his team designed the rocket engines there to lift Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin off the moon. So he was an incredible person. Had an incredible career, and so I'm so blessed and fortunate to have called him my grandfather. But going back to the story on D-Day, so he wasn't in like the first wave, but the beachheads in Normandy by no means were won by the time his landing craft was coming up to the beaches. So in those landing crafts, you have young GIs just packed in there. You have a couple officers that are ranked a little bit higher in the front of those landing crafts. And then the highest ranked officer is in the back of the landing craft. So at the time, so if anybody's seen movies, Saving Private Ryan, so the character that Tom Hanks played was a rank of captain. So that was the same rank that my grandfather was at the time of D-Day. So as the landing craft is coming aboard, and you can imagine, I mean, I can't imagine the what was going through those people's minds at all. You have 18, 19, 20 year old kids, privates, knowing that chances are me or somebody else next to me is not going to be alive here in the next hour. And as that craft was getting closer to shore, my grandfather could sense that the two sergeants that were up front, especially this one sergeant who was to the left of the boat, was not able to get to the space he needed to be in from a leadership standpoint. So you have these young guys that are looking at this sergeant for some type of leadership. And my grandfather could see and sense that he wasn't able to provide that to those troops. So what my grandfather did is he made his way up to the front of the boat at that time as they're going through that choppy water. And he just simply put his hand on that sergeant's back. And this is told to my dad at my grandfather's funeral by the sergeant who's from Ohio. And he put it in, he didn't know my grandfather was coming, put his hand on his back, on his shoulder, and then just said, "Hey, I got this today. I'll take it from here. No sweat. We got this." So if you think about that for a minute, I can't imagine, you know, what's going through everybody's mind in that boat. So here's my grandfather, the highest ranking person in that landing craft, was the exact first person off of that boat onto the beachhead there to try to win that beachhead. I don't know how I can be any more proud.
I'm sweating just thinking about being in this situation, Eric.
Yeah, I don't know how I could be any more proud of the man that he was. So when I think of own your moment, that is to its core owning your moment. And the sergeant, all these years later, when he was at my grandfather's funeral, was very emotional telling my dad the story because he knew that he didn't have it that day. And the moment got the best of him. And honestly, how could it not? I mean, I think about what would I do in that situation? I'm a pretty tough-minded guy. I don't know. I have no idea what I would do in that situation. I crap my pants. I don't know. I mean, but for my grandfather to have that type of toughness in that moment and be there mentally to give his troops what they needed to get off of that boat and on shore, man, my word. And a lot of those, there's some of those guys that didn't make it that are buried in Normandy that served under my grandfather. My dad's actually named after one of them that's lying in rest at Normandy at the American cemetery there. And that sergeant of my grandfather wound up serving all the way through the whole war together in Europe, and wound up coming back home. They were going to be deployed. They were getting ready. They actually went out to the West Coast to get ready to be sent over to Japan at the time of the atomic bomb. So then once obviously that brought an end to the war in the Pacific. Side note, my grandfather's brother, my uncle Archie, was missing in action in Burma during the course of the war in the Pacific, was missing in action. His whole unit was basically killed beside him. He fought his way out of the jungle with Burmese guerrilla troops until he was able to catch up with the U.S. Army again. So I draw a lot of strength from that. And, you know, I think about what's a bad day to me. Ultimately, what's a bad day? I don't land a client. I get a bad workout in. I don't know about you, but that's a pretty bad day coming on shore with machine gun fire and shrapnel and landmines and all kinds of crap, people trying to kill you. That's a bad day. So what's a bad day to me? So that's kind of the perspective that I keep.
I'm with you. I mean, what's a bad day to me? It's nothing. My life is way more comfortable than that.
Yeah. And it's so everything for me, whenever I'm working with clients, own your moment is always at the top of my mind and always goes back to my grandpa.
It's powerful. And what's coming to fruition for me is when you're owning your moment, it might not be in that scenario that's life or death, something that I'm sweating listening to the story. If you start owning your moment right now, today, with your competitor's mentality today, you're in a better position to actually achieve and do well in that high stress moment, right? Have you been in moments, obviously not that serious, I can imagine, but have you been in any moments that you're breaking a sweat, you maybe start to fight or flight, you don't know what to do? Have you had that experience yourself? Has that came up for you personally?
Oh, 100%. Many times. I mean, I can point to a horrible relationship that I had going back a number of years ago before thankfully I met my wife, and my wife and I have been happily married now for a while. But I was in a terrible relationship with somebody that I almost proposed to that was that fight or flight. And I had to get my mind around what was best for me, not what other people thought was best for me and that didn't know really what was going on there. But, you know, the other thing is I look at, you know, going back to, you know, we mentioned 9/11 earlier, and that was a very pivotal time for me. After the towers fell and knowing the history of my family in the military, my dad was in the Air Force, my sister was in the Air Force. My dad was in Vietnam. He flew on C-130s in supply in and out of having people shoot at him and stuff like that and in out of country there. And I got to the point where I was playing college soccer. And
where'd you play?
I played at Buffalo State, and I was so worked up about what happened to our country, how we were attacked, that I was going to go enlist. And I wasn't a guy that was going to go enlist and, you know, have somebody, you know, be a mechanic or something like that and, you know, fix stuff. I was going to have a gun in my hand and go right up to the front line. That's just my personality. And you know, we had a recruiting station 3 blocks from our house that, you know, where I grew up. And I remember getting in the car and my dad coming out and saying, "War's not what you think it is. This choice is going to define you for the rest of your life. So you need to really think long and hard. I know you're upset, but you know, your grandfather's seen war. I've seen war. Other members of your family have seen war. You really have to understand what's ahead for you if this is really what you want to do, and your life will never be the same." Ultimately, I said, thanks, Dad. Appreciate the advice. See you later. Typical college age person.
Right.
And I drove up to the recruiting station and I sat in my car for an hour and a half. I didn't go in. And I look back at that time as a fork in the road for me. And I continued to play soccer in college, moved on with my life, got into the business world, and here I am. And I go back to that time and say, how could things have been? I look at that and say, how could things have been different? Would I have made it home? Would I have come home in a casket with a flag draped over it? What friends would I have? What would I be doing now? What would I have met my wife? Would I have my son? There's so many things that would be radically different about my life. So that's a very defining moment for me, is that 90 minutes I sat in my car at the recruiting station and didn't go in. And for a long time, I had a tremendous amount of regret for that. And I would see people from Western New York that, you know, you'd see in the news that were, you know, killed in action. Or then you hear about, you know, Pat Tillman, you know, gave up his NFL career and, you know, he was killed in the fratricide thing in Afghanistan on friendly fire. And I had a lot of guilt that I dealt with about, you know, they had more guts than I did to make the decision. But then I realized it wasn't about that. And it just wasn't my calling. It wasn't what I was supposed to do. And once I worked around that and figured out what I was supposed to do, a lot of that subsided. But for a long time, that ate me up inside. And, and that's why I think I have such an attachment. I have an attachment to the military just through my family, but more so for all those guys that went over there to Afghanistan and Iraq that didn't make it home because that, it could have been me. But yeah, it was a huge moment in my life.
It's very brave, and it's a hard decision to make. It's a very honorable decision. Do you feel that guilt still today? Do you feel that regret still today? And if you're over it, I'm going to assume it didn't just happen. Maybe it did. Maybe just one day you felt better, but anything from mentorship to athletics, how do you get over that kind of thing? Because all of us have felt that kind of regret in our lives. How did you get over that level of regret, and how can I implement it in my life, even if it's a completely different scenario?
Ultimately, you have to connect with who you are and what your mission is and what you're put on this planet to do. And that takes a lot of deep inner work. That getting in touch with really who you are, there's no, you know, recipe to that. That's a lot of soul searching and a lot of questions that you have to ask yourself. And how you get there is all different for everybody. And I wish I had a secret recipe or a magic wand, but you know, you really have to ask yourself some really tough questions and then ultimately arrive at whatever your mission is and what you're put on this earth to do and what your voice is here for. And we all are gifted with a voice. We're all gifted with certain skills and we're all here for a reason. Everybody needs to search that out, and not enough people do. There's so many people that have a voice to influence change that don't do it because they're afraid of what people think. They're afraid of what people are going to say, and you can't care. I don't know how to say it any better than that. And it's tough. It's so hard to not care what other people think, especially when you have a loved one that is coming to you with whatever they think is the right thing to do. And it's tough to say to that loved one, no, I'm going to stay true to me. And that may create a divide, but that's okay because you have to live your life and you have to live true to you and be who you are. Instead of trying to live a life that somebody else thinks. And ultimately that's where I landed at. And, you know, it was tough for me because, you know, generations of my family have served in combat.
Right.
And I kind of felt like I was letting them down. Not that somebody said that, but I thought that's what they thought. But ultimately it wasn't meant to be for me. Mm-hmm. And my calling all these years later has been found, and that's to coach people, and it's to bring results to people that maybe they've never had in their life. But that's an 18-year journey to get to that point. And it's still not over. It's just a spot, and it's a chapter in a book.
Eric, this is the rewind section of the show where you got to click the 30-second rewind a few times and listen to that again. I love everything you said there. I mean, I need to be true to me. You need to be true to you. And we addressed it at the start. You just addressed it. You're honest. I don't have a magic wand. It's not as simple as just fixing it. And it does take a lot of inner work, I can imagine. You know, what I'm getting out of this is, okay, so you don't have a three-step process for me to get over my regrets and my traumas. It's going to be harder than that. It's going to take work. It's going to take time. And for me, it takes helping people and just bringing joy into my life, even if I have regrets, just bringing joy into my life. I jump around a lot. That's how my brain works. You mentioned you played soccer at Buff State.
Yeah.
And Rochester Business Connections, obviously Rochester theme. I've had a couple Buffalo people, a couple Finger Lakes people, really a regional show. Are you a Buffalo man through and through? You're from Buffalo, Niagara, right?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I grew up in Kenmore, which is an immediate suburb just outside the city of Buffalo. You know, grew up there, stayed close to home pretty much my entire life. Now I live up in Lewiston, which is about 30 minutes north of Buffalo, right on the Niagara River Gorge. And, you know, I've worked out of Rochester through Mass Mutual out of the office there for a number of years. I have a little bit of a soft spot in my heart for Rochester. It's a cool town. I think there's some really, I love the suburbs there. City's leaves a little bit to be desired in the downtown area, but I think we all can agree on that. But you know, this region's coming back, and it's really cool to see kind of what's going on all throughout, you know, Buffalo, Rochester, even Syracuse, some things that are going on over there. There's a lot of really cool new development. And I think it's really making that shift out of the Rust Belt, so to speak, and, you know, factory stuff into more tech and business incubators and all those types of things, which is really, really neat to see that revitalization kind of come through.
Yeah. Tech, business, creatives. I know personally, I love Lewiston. Like before COVID, almost monthly, weekly, if I could, you'd find me at Art Park for like big rock shows and big events down in the Buffalo area. I'm wondering, when you're putting let's just put work aside, we're going to shit around, we're going to have a good time. What in Western New York do you like to do? What does Eric like to do for fun?
Really, for me, it's just, I'm a family guy. You know, I spend a lot of time with my wife and son. We have another little boy on the way in July.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thanks. I went through a massive party stage in my 20s and early 30s. So I got all that out of my system. I don't really do much of that anymore. I'm a homebody. But I'm so blessed and fortunate to live, you know, 175 steps outside my front door is the Niagara Gorge. So what I like to do is get out to the, go over to the gorge, you know, go for walks around there, run, get down in the gorge. So that's kind of where I, thankfully it's not far, but I can go there and kind of escape a little bit. My wife and I and our son, we like to go down, you know, into the village of Lewiston and to the shops and restaurants there and, you know, and all that. So that's kind of what we like to do.
It's fun, man. Just to keep it lighthearted and fun, I always like to do the rapid fire round because a lot of my listeners, they just want to get to know Eric a little bit better. So rapid fire round, either or some of them are fill in the blank questions, short and sweet, just to get to know you a little bit more. Sound good?
Absolutely. Sound good. Let's rock.
Coffee or tea?
Cafe mocha.
Ooh, okay. Beer or wine?
Right now, neither. You know, I'm not much into drinking right now because I'm so focused on, you know, fitness and my business. But summer's coming up, so I'll probably, I do like some of the summer ales that are out there, so I probably lean toward beer, you know, once the summer kind of gets going. But I don't really drink much outside of that for the rest of the year.
Hey, water is a good answer too, right? That you can't go wrong with water.
100 ounces a day.
Yes, sir. Cats or dogs?
Dogs, but we have two cats, so we're in the market for a dog. But I'm more of a dog guy than a cat guy.
Is the cats come from the wife?
One from the wife, and one that we actually found when he was 4 weeks old that trotted in front of our car while we were driving. So,
well, thanks for doing that. That's noble of you, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you a morning person? You're up running at 4 a.m. or no?
I'm a morning guy. Yeah, I'm up, you know, 5 something in the morning, every morning.
We'll do a little longer answer on the next couple of these because you mentioned, you know, you're reading daily. Sure, we all mess up sometimes. We can't get everything done, but you even mentioned even 15 minutes a day. And when you were saying that, I did the math real quick. I'm like 15 minutes a day, 30 days a month. You're reading like 450 minutes, even at 15 minutes a day. That's hours upon hours. You could be reading a book a month, a book every couple of weeks, even with just 10 to 20 minutes a day. Blows my mind that people don't read. I didn't start reading till my 20s, so I'm not one to talk. Any either best books that you're reading right now or books that, like, if someone's really struggling and just wants advice, like, what books would you gift them? Anything come to mind for, you know, best books right now or best gifts for other people?
Oh, man. Yeah, there's so many. What I'm reading right now is Chop Wood, Carry Water by Josh Metcalf, which is it's about a 120-page book. Really great read. I would definitely recommend anybody pick that up. And as far as somebody looking to grab a book that's really easy, that's going to be so impactful in your life, it's The Coffee Bean, written by my friend Damon West. And it was co-authored by John Gordon. The message around the coffee bean is, so there's a carrot, there's an egg, and then there's a coffee bean. And if you subject all three of those to hot water, they all get a different response. So the carrot softens in hard water, the egg hardens in hot water, and the coffee bean makes coffee.
Yeah.
So for somebody looking for a quick reboot on their mind, anybody can read that book literally in an hour. It's a tremendous book. Like I said, my friend Damon West wrote it. Damon's got another book out called The Change Agent, which is a tremendous book. I've had Damon on my podcast. Tremendous guy, former college quarterback that actually spent time in prison in Texas, got out of prison, and is just radically changing people's worlds with his coffee bean message all throughout the United States. And you know, Damon's a fantastic guy, and I can't recommend the book anymore. I mean, it's a phenomenal, easy read. You can read it with your kids, your spouse. It's just a great book and a great message that you are the one that controls your responses to the environment that you're in. So if you're, if you're put in a really tough environment, are you going to get soft and shrivel up, or are you going to get hard and act like the tough guy and be the macho guy, or are you just going to make coffee, man, and just make the best out of whatever situation that you're in?
I love it, man. They say you take lemons, you make lemonade. I say you take lemons, you go and you play some baseball. But you get to choose what you do with the lemons. You get to choose what you do with the coffee. Well, how do I listen to that episode? How do I subscribe to your podcast, reach out to you for advice, enter your world a little bit better?
Sure. Yeah. So you can get the podcast. It's on everywhere. I mean, Apple, Spotify,
and that's Competitors Amazon. Mentality Podcast. Yep.
Competitors Mentality Podcast, Apple, Amazon, Spotify, iHeartRadio, any of the big ones. You can get that. I haven't come out with an episode in about 4 weeks, but I've got a number of them in the bank here that I'm going to be rolling out pretty soon again. So I got about, I don't know, probably 40 in total episodes, that I've done over the last year that are up there ready to go for people. So, ton of great guests. So if you're looking for content from Navy SEALs to people like Damon to pro athletes to athletic directors, college football coaches, you name it, it's on there. And everybody wants to connect with me. It's Eric@competitorsmentality.com. The website's competitorsmentality.com. I'm active on Instagram at Eric Philippon. So any one of those ways to connect with me. And if there's anybody out there looking for a coach, I'd love to have a conversation with you and see if we're a fit to work together.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive deeper into your podcast. I'll put that in the show notes, so it's just a click away. Eric, I generally like to end the show with like a one final question, like a tip question, or what should I have asked you? And this just came to mind. It's weird. I don't even know if it's a good question or not. We'll see what happens. But sure. You host a podcast where it's your role to ask good questions, listen, and try to elicit the best responses from your guests. So imagine the roles were reversed. I'm Eric. I'm on that side with the mic. You're me, and this is your podcast. What did I forget to ask? What would you have asked yourself, granted? What would you have asked? And the second part, what would be the answer to that question? Is there any questions I should be bringing into my repertoire that I maybe forgot?
That's a really, really, really good one. Let me chew on that a second.
Please do. And I'll ramble for a second. This came to mind and I was thinking like the best person to ask for advice on asking questions is another podcast host. And you know yourself better than me, right? So what comes to mind?
I would say, I like to get into failure with people. I don't know why, but I like to see how people respond to failure and what are some of the things that you put in place to respond and to learn and to grow. So what about you? When you fail, what do you do? How do you process it? How do you internalize it? And how do you get better?
So you're supposed to answer the question, but I'll answer it too. The analogy I like to give, my short pithy answer, is I take my failures and they're still bricks in the home that I'm building. They're still part of the foundation. I'm going to take my failure and I'm going to step on top of it, squeeze it in there, make sure it sticks real good. And then I'm going to take a success and put it right next to it. So it's a learning experience. I don't like talking about my I prefer asking the questions because I don't like being vulnerable and talking about my failures. But what happens is like I can't fail because my failures are part of the long-term success, right? And I want to give you an opportunity to kind of extend on that if you have a different answer to that kind of question.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic answer. And every failure is a chance to learn and to get better. And, going back to, using special forces for an example, and those special forces teams. So if you look at like the SEAL teams, they drill and drill and drill and go through their mission. And every time that they run through a training op, they immediately debrief every single one of those training ops that they run and become incredibly open and vulnerable with each other and what they could have done better, what their teammates could have done better. And then they go back and they do it all over again and debrief immediately afterwards, go back, do it all over again. And you look at the mission that, well, everybody says SEAL Team 6, they're not called SEAL Team 6, it's DevGru, that DevGru went on to the raid on Osama bin Laden's compound. So they built out a compound. I believe they built it out in South Carolina, in a facility in South Carolina. They built that compound out. They drilled on that scale model compound over and over and over and over and over again. Failed over and over and over and over again. Got into that mission. What happened? They had failure as soon as they got to that compound with a helicopter crash.
Right.
Well, if they didn't go through that and drill and fail and all of those training runs on that scale model compound, they would have never executed that raid. And they just adapted, like falling off a log. They just adapted. And they went on, and obviously they won the mission. They killed bin Laden. They brought him back. They identified him, and they won. So every chance, every time that you fail is a chance to, is a chance to learn and to debrief and to get better. And it's interesting for me when, and I'll make this short, but if you look at, I use a roller coaster example with people. So say you're on a roller coaster at your favorite theme park. You know, there's what's that theme park that's outside of Cleveland down there on the lake? I forget what it's called, but it's like this big, huge, beautiful theme park.
It's not coming. Yeah.
So say you're on a roller coaster there, and you're going up that roller coaster, and if you know, I look at it like I got a pretty girl, my wife, whoever it is, kind of on my sitting right next to me, and you're going up, and you get up to the top of that roller coaster, right, and you have, life is idyllic. You have a beautiful view. You see everything, beautiful sunshiny day, blue water, blue skies, life is grand. Well, what's going to happen is that's going to crest, and that's going to come down at a rate of speed that you can't control, that you don't have a steering wheel, you don't have brakes. There's nothing you can do to stop that from bottoming out.
Better have the belt on.
Yeah, I want to know how you respond when you bottom out. I do not want to know how you respond when life is great, because how you respond at the bottom of that defines who you are as an individual, not how you are at the top.
Eric, brother, you've been incredible, man. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, man. I appreciate it, and you know, love to do it again sometime.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.